And welcome back to the Real Investment Hour. I'm Rich Rosso here with Danny Ratliff. And we are on with Chris Versace, Chief Investment Officer for Thematica Research. And I would love to be Chris any day, but I would not want to be Jerome Powell tomorrow. I don't want to be. I mean, this is his press conference coming out party.
I don't think you would want to be me tomorrow when you're shoveling 8 inches of snow.
No, goodness, more snow for you guys. My goodness. Yeah. Well, Chris, I mean, I think there was, when Powell first came out, everybody loved him. You know, he's not a PhD. He's more in the trenches. No. He doesn't pull punches kind of thing. But he is dealing with such a precarious situation, right? He's dealing with this uncertainty in D.C. We're pressure possibly to raise rates. He uses the I word probably more than I'm comfortable with, the inflation word. What are you all expecting at Thematica from this press conference?
Well, let's deal with what we expect the action to be. And mm-hmm. the action is going, most likely he will raise interest rates a quarter point tomorrow. That's you know, if you look at any survey by economists, strategists, and the like, I think it's near, 100% that expectation is had, and it will, most likely happen. The real question is, what will he say during the press conference? What will the updated dot plot or the Fed forecast reveal? And the third part is, will he signal a hawkish or dovish tone? Okay, so let's take them backwards.
Okay.
Hawkish or dovish? I'm of the mindset that he's going to be dovish. And I say that, one, it is his first, official outing as Fed chairman, his first press conference. And when you look at the economic data that we've been getting, over the last several weeks, if you look at the Citibank Economic Surprise Index, mm-hmm. The data has been kind of rolling over, meaning that we're not beating expectations. It's coming in weaker than expected.
Yep.
That, I think, can give them some room. You have to remember, too, that coming out of the January employment report, there's a lot of talk about, wage growth, inflation. And if you dug into the numbers the way Lenore did, you quickly realized that the wage growth was responsible for about 18% of the workforce, supervisors and managers. If you looked at the other 82%, next to nothing. And we saw that again in February, the February employment report, where that 80 to 82% had very little wage growth year over year. So I don't think inflation is quite as hot and heavy as everybody makes it out to be. And then, mm-hmm. lo and behold, the February CPI, PPI came in almost in line with expectations, not very hot year over year. So I think those two things on the data side give Powell to be a little dovish. And then, as you kind of pointed out, there's a lot of uncertainty about what's going on emanating from D.C. Several weeks ago, it kicked off with steel and aluminum tariffs, right? Mm-hmm. Will they, won't they? What will happen? I, at the time, said this was a playbook from Trump's book, Art of the Deal, where he was really negotiating. And if you remember when he signed them into action, there was a lot less bite, more bark to what was going on. But now what do we have? Now he's threatening Canada. Now he's talking about, $60 billion. Against China and some other things that you're sitting there and you're going like, oh my God, what could happen? And I think Powell's going to sit there and go, wow, there's a lot of stuff here. We could rock the boat, inadvertently, and really scare the economy, scare the economists, and scare the strategists on my first day.
Yeah, on your first day. And that's the impression you're going to leave. And you said it, and we've been writing about it too. The numbers, the economic numbers, are sort of rolling over when you're looking at retail sales and you see credit card defaults. And, he's not going in there with a GDP now revised down for first quarter. He's not walking in there with an overheated economy to begin with.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So all of this gives him room. And remember, too, that we're only 3 months into the year. There's another 9 months to go. There are several FOMC meetings to be had. They can wait and, continue to go along the path of expected three. Maybe in the middle of the year signal, hey, if things are looking better, maybe we could get that fourth rate hike, which would, again, from my perspective, not, break the camel's back. It would be good to have, interest rates approaching more normalized levels, because at some point, And I hate to break this to people, you know, we are long in the tooth in the current business cycle, which means at some point, and I'm not calling for it, just saying at some point, we will have the next recession. It has to happen. It is a mathematical certainty. I do think, however, that Trump is going to do everything he can to push that recession off at least until the next election. And I don't mean the 2018 election. I mean the 2020 election.
2020.
Do you think he has enough arrows in his quiver to do that fiscally?
I don't, you know, it'll be interesting to see because things, as you know, tend to take a little bit of time. So we haven't really seen any of the benefits of tax reform yet. That is coming. If they can figure out infrastructure and the financing mechanism, which I think ultimately will be a combination of public-private partnerships, that will start to kick in as well. And remember, too, I hate to say this, but our fellow Americans, we are rather... you know, short memories, and we tend to vote with our pockets. So by the time the election rolls around, if people are feeling better, like they've got more money in their pocket, they're more optimistic, I would say the odds of a re-election are probably better. You know, we'll have to see exactly, you know, Lord knows what he'll say between now and then on Twitter and everything else. You know, so it's not a slam dunk by any stretch of the imagination. And the point is, he has to get the economy on a pace that's been better than it has been. It's a great question that you ask. Does he have enough arrows in his quiver to make that happen this far into the business cycle?
The problem has been, Chris, and you know this better than anybody since the Great Recession, it's been an aggregate demand problem more than anything else. And putting wages in people's pockets, that 82% have not gotten wage growth. And now we see record buybacks with money coming in and anticipated benefits for corporations, but when do you actually see wage growth for that 82%?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you're seeing some of it, right, with rising minimum wages, but that's not going to move the overall needle.
That's right.
The scarier part to me is, you know, I haven't done this calculus yet, but you know, if you look at credit card debt, it's passed over $1 trillion and it continues to climb. Indicative of the fact that people are, you know, like if you want to spend, there's only two ways you can do it, right? You can either make more money or you can borrow more money, right? And if they're not making more money, they're obviously borrowing more money. And then you layer on, you know, the auto loans and student debt, and all of a sudden you start to go, what disposable income is there? People are turning to credit cards. And at some point, that bubble is going to pop. And the concern I have on that aspect of it, because remember, the consumer is directly, indirectly, two-thirds of the economy, is as rates go higher, that means whatever disposable income they may have today is going to go lower.
Yes. And we've seen that wage gap being made up, but with the use of credit. And
yeah, exactly.
And now borrowing costs are going higher. So, I mean, again, I'd love being in your shoes a couple of times, but not Mr. Powell's to navigate this economy because... It is going to be a balancing act because maybe what's really good for Main Street and all this infrastructure is not going to be good for the stock market.
It's a great point. It is a great point. We know, you know, just generically speaking, that as interest rates go higher, there will be money that's peeling off into safer investments, you know, more steady investments. Historically, over the last several years, what's one of the reasons why the market has, you know, climbed the way it has? It's because there was no rate of return to be had in, you know, savings banks, CDs, and other things. So you were forcing people back into the market. What happens when that starts to, you know, pull out? That's one of the issues to watch for the back half of the year.
Especially with what you all talk about, and no one uses the D word very much anymore, but demographics, right?
Oh,
it favors...
I know what you're... No.
Demographics, right? That is an incredible... headwind. So
since you asked that question, I'll give you a little pop quiz. What is the fastest growing demographic in the United States?
I don't know, age 65 and older?
Be more specific.
Fastest growing, still working?
No, just, you know, what group of the population is becoming larger faster than any other group?
Yeah, I would say 70 years old and female. That's what I would say.
Oh, so close. I don't have the male-female breakdowns, but it's 75 and older.
Okay.
And if you think about the issue with 75 and older, you know, obviously, you have more people not working than working, which means, you know, we're in an upside down triangle from a tax revenue perspective, another headache to talk about another time. But if you just look at these people, age 75 or over, increasingly, they have a very tough time taking care of themselves. You know, and if you look at the growth rates of Alzheimer's, it's off the charts, from about 4.7 million Americans, I believe, by 2025 to around, you know, somewhere between 8 and 9 million. So that's almost a doubling in that issue, which is a boon for assisted living companies. But mm-hmm. from an economic perspective, huge headwind for the economy. Because remember, you know, once you become a boomer and you retire, once you are a person who retires, not necessarily a boomer, you are inherently in conserve mode, spend mode.
That's right.
So you're going to, you might be more in line with our cash-strapped consumer investing theme, looking for ways to stretch your disposable income. You might be trading down. You may not be traveling as much. Maybe, you know, depending on what your situation is. And I think as you go through life and you retire, the fact that, you know, 30% of Americans don't have any retirement savings, the fact that,
correct.
You know, there's another stat, I believe, a little higher than that they don't have an emergency fund. These become major issues as we have more of our population not working and not able to take care of themselves.
I think that portends to having below average GDP growth. You might get spikes, but for the most part, it's going to be a challenge to move this behemoth. It really is, based on everything that's against the
If Lenore was here, she would say there are two things that drive GDP. It is population growth and productivity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not getting one without, you know, some overhaul in immigration. There's only so much productivity can do.
Well, Chris, we loved having you on. I wish we had you on longer. And again, we'll have you on hopefully in the next few weeks if you're willing to come on with us again.
Happy to do it whenever you guys want to have me on.
Thanks so much, Chris, for your insights tonight. And again, you've been listening to The Real Investment Hour on AM 700, The Voice of Texas.